Welcome to CFRI's Cystic Fibrosis Community Voices, a video podcast series created by and for the cystic fibrosis community.
We have been streaming live on Facebook, and I know we have some questions that have come in. And at this time, I want to invite Stacy Reveles, my colleague at CFRI, to unmute and there we go. Hello, Stacy. Welcome.
Hello. Hello, everybody. And Luann, may I just say thank you so much for sharing your inspiration, your as you call it, your little story with us all. And I completely agree with Siri that this is something that can be watched every time. You'll get something new out of it. It can be watched many times.
Thank you so much.
Stacy, do you want to launch the question?
Absolutely. First question for you, Luann, is what surprised you most during your transplant recovery, and what advice would you offer someone facing transplant surgery?
Great. Great question. I had no anticipations because I thought that since it's jargon to say that we're all unique, but I knew that however it was going to go for me, no matter what I thought I knew or what I understood, it was probably not going to be the case. And so I didn't go in with any expectations, and I was granted those visions of the man on the moon. And so I really felt like this is a solo voyage, and it's going to be, you know, if NASA is the surgery team and I am Buzz Aldrin, you know, we're going to be connected doing this thing. But I had been suggested to me to watch some movies about transplant. I did not do that. I tried to keep a very mentally healthy, upbeat. One day, if this is meant to be, I'm going to go through this thing. And so I really stayed away from negative vibes or the data of percentages of who survives and who might not, who doesn't survive, and how long you might live if you make it through it. I didn't absorb any of that data, because when I was first diagnosed, of course, the data then said I would be 19. So I didn't buy that was the way for me to go. I just wanted to surround myself with beauty and love, and I read, and I just tried to stay positive and surround myself with a loving atmosphere. So that's my advice. And it's a terrifying not knowing, will this be the last day? And as a person tends to decline in the state that you are pre-transplant, it is terrifying. But I just decided that it was best for me to take a day at a time and to try to stay as positive as possible.
That is wonderful advice. Thank you. Another question that came in is, can you tell us a little bit more about what it's like taking your second first breath? And after your double lung transplant, what did you notice that was different about breathing? Was it instantly easier to breathe?
Yeah, it's a most extraordinary state. I've never had a baby, so I'm not sure if it's similar to that moment of childbirth when the object comes out of the body. But during surgery, once the new lungs are in, then rubber lungs are put inside to keep the form of the new lungs, and those are inflated. So, you know, you remain on oxygen for maybe 3 days. And so when the time comes, a surgeon comes back around. And in my case, I had two doctors there, and basically it was a very swift push, which I suppose is definitely what women have to do to have the baby. But we were pushing from, you know, the diaphragm and these damaged muscles from the incision, because you still have staples in the chest. It's horribly painful. But I did as they asked, and out came through my mouth these huge rubber lungs. And they're out. And that was such an extraordinary and kind of terrifying thing, that, you know, this huge thing was stuffed down in your new chest cavity. And then there's a moment where nothing happens. I couldn't hear, I couldn't, my senses were shut down. And then they were, breathe. Just like maybe when you first, you know, take a huge swim as a kid, and then you're coming up and your mom goes, "Don't breathe," right? And there it was, and I began to cry, and I was on air. They immediately took the cannula out, no more oxygen. And we just practiced a few breaths. Those were my lungs in my chest that day. And it was truly, well, you can see, I can't speak. It was an extraordinary experience. Yeah.
And thank you for sharing that account. That's something I've not heard myself before. So this is absolutely extraordinary to hear. Moving to another question is, where do you get your inspiration from to take on life the way that you have? Is there anyone in your life who has especially guided you or inspired you and helped you along staying on the sunny side of the street?
I had a beautiful mother, and it was musical and funny. Also a bit of a tragic figure because she'd had so many deaths in her family, and I think basically an unhappy marriage. And so, but she was a much larger person than her life had allowed her to be, or she'd allowed her life to be. But she gave me great confidence as a child, and I excelled at things, and I was in very good schools. I had excellent teachers. So over the years, I mean, I can say that once my brain had developed somewhat and I identified my course, that I was very fortunate, especially at the doctoral level, to have studied with two bona fide geniuses. And so to be in the company of those kind of people is really, that's really inspiring. But I seem to be a person that has always chose characters. You know, I have hundreds of really interesting people in my life, and they're characters, they're real characters, and they've inspired me. And I've just always felt that, doggone, what an incredible place. I mean, if you've ever seen the Sistine Chapel, and if you've ever seen a field of tulips, and you've ever seen, you know, the hummingbirds and all their varieties, hugged a redwood tree. I mean, what's not to love here? We've been given an absolute cornucopia. And then there's the human being, right? And then there's the human being. So my inspiration, my energy, I mean, I've been called a person who has fire in the belly. So I've just, you know, I've just been excited to be here. And make things, you know, I like making things. Yeah.
Well, that certainly shows.
Yes, it does. There was a question, and you spoke about your mother, and really in light of the time and how few medical options there were, there's a question about, were there battles with your parents as you wanted to launch your life and not be held out, or did they encourage you to spread your wings and travel?
Yeah, in fact, my father, who's 80, will be 90, told me the other day, he said, "Oh, your mother was terrified for you to go to Rome." But I said, "Nope, we're going to get everything she needs from the doctors in Dallas, and she has got to go. She has got to go." And so I remember shopping to find that duffel bag that would carry that nebulizer, and getting, you know, all, I don't know how we did it because drugs are so mutable, but I took enough Mucomist with me. And I think I went to Catholic University in Rome, and I think we kept it in the refrigerator there, and I had license to go in the kitchen and get my Mucomist. And it was, Yeah, I mean, I took chances because I loved what I saw. Yeah. I've got to go to New York. Oh, I've got to see the tulip fields in Delft. I've got to go to the Temple of Apollo. You know, I've got to do this. I've got to, you know, so it was always just part of my probably innate character, with or without CF. I don't know. With CF, it seemed like everything was more urgent. You know, like if you don't get on this, you're not going to know. So.
Yeah. And everyone loves a love story. I have to say, that photo of you in your wedding dress getting into the taxi, I think, mm-hmm. is so stunning. And I really appreciated the little do not smoke sign on the window. That was amazing. But there was a question about your wonderful husband and when you met and how you shared that you had CF, especially at that time when the prognosis was certainly far scarier than possibly now.
Yeah. So Daniel and I met in 2000 at the University of Virginia, and I was on faculty there and finishing my doctoral coursework. And the man I was studying with, David Summers, who's a Renaissance scholar, was one of the first cohorts at the Getty Research Institute. So he had left, and his premier office was left vacant. And so I had gone on faculty, and Daniel had just come from Scotland as the visiting filmmaker. We were both given the same office, and we saw each other sort of, and kind of like big dogs checking each other out, or little dog, big dog, kind of. And then there was a Daniel Reeves festival throughout Charlottesville, and I went to one of the sold out screenings at the Art House, and I was just absolutely blown away. And I figured, this guy that made this masterpiece is my office mate. I've got to have a cup of coffee with him. And so he was very much the star. You know, nobody would give me his number or his email. And it dawned on me, well, I'll just call my own office and leave him a message because we shared the phone. So we not only went for a coffee, we went for a 7-hour dinner. Because he was a young Marine, because he had the trauma of being the radio operator during the first attack of the Tet Offensive in Vietnam, because he had sought to heal his own psychic and physical wounds from war by going to India and working through the horror of that, he had a big empathic heart. He had a big space. So I'm sure that I appeared to him as this, you know, real go-getter, and, you know, this person who was, when you do Picasso studies, it's a sort of whole other realm of studying, because it's, you know, the most impossible and extraordinary artist of the 20th century. So that sets things apart. But anyway, Daniel, I think probably thought that I was someone other than who I was. But once we got going, first of all, on this 7-hour visit, and then the next 7-hour visit, and eventually a love story, he had all the room in the world for me. You know, he had all the room in the world for my frailty during our courtship. I was even in the hospital in Charlottesville, and then in the hospital once we went to Scotland several times, and he's never stepped away. He's never stepped away. But I'm sure that it's because he loves me, but he also understands. He has a huge heart for suffering, and he has a huge heart for, he has a lot of room for the language of despair at points. You can, people with CF can have a great deal of despair because you can't breathe. But yeah. He was the we have identified that we're the perfect people for each other from day one.
Such a blessing. Just beautiful. Yeah. Stacey, I have one last question, and then if you have any after that. People who have with CF, who've had a transplant, have shared that sometimes they feel they're between two worlds, this whole new transplant community and then the CF community. And so somebody asked what your experience of this has been between these two, the community you were in and then moving to the world of transplant.
Yeah, because cystic fibrosis troubles different parts of our bodies. I should say that my gastrosystem, my pancreas, my blood sugar levels, my eyes, my nervous system, that all belongs to cystic fibrosis. And my lungs now belong to transplant. So I think it's just the most extraordinary time to survive this disease, because we have such a rich community, scientific community, social work community, philanthropic community, research community. And so I don't feel pulled between them. I think it is like, well, that person cuts my hair and this person gives me a pedicure, you know? And so I'm of a mind that's my team, you know, all these guys are my team, and they're not vying for, you know, one part of me or the other. It's like, I've got this going on with my lungs. We've got to talk to transplant. This is going on with my gut. I got to get with the CF folks. So I don't, you know, I would challenge people to consider it as a holistic opportunity. You know, that the team got bigger, you know, that your help got bigger. Yeah, that's my experience.
Stacey, did you have any other questions?
Yes, and I think this is a wonderful question after spending such a delightful afternoon with you, Luann. Thank you again for joining us and sharing this with the cystic fibrosis community through CFRI. The last question is there one takeaway that you'd like us all in this audience to take with us after having the pleasure to have heard your, as you call it, your little story?
You know, when I was working on this talk, it was very hard for me to write. I had to look really deep in myself outside of the goals of, 1 year and prednisone is reduced. You know, what really happened here? You know, what's the larger sense of myself in the world now? And it has really, you know, I'm a problem solver. I like projects. I like to problem solve. I like to build things. I've built museums. I made books. You know, I like to see the result of things. And I have not been successful nor allowed to know who my donor was. And I understand those protocols. So it begged the larger question of me to ask myself, does it matter? You know, does it matter? It was suggested, I wrote letters, they were all translated into Spanish. I sent Easter cards and Christmas cards. Then the bead of connection disappeared and the family disappeared. So it was theorized maybe they were migrant workers. But as I said at the end of my talk, I felt that due to the anonymity of these lungs that I hold, that I take care of, that have been granted to me through the mystery of chance, through the mystery of something larger than chance, can we not take these lessons that we learned through transplant of another person leaving and I get to stay, that underscores how we really are all together, we are all united. That someone that I don't know, it could be from a village somewhere very far away, who needed the opportunity of employment, who came to harvest lettuce and maybe had an accident. And here I am, this woman who comes from Texas that went to here and there, and we have the identical chest size, blood type, everything about it. We are called a match. And so my takeaway is almost political. You know, my takeaway is almost to say, can't we use these realities as a way to say, we are all here together and we all want love and need love and need shelter and need food and need warmth, and we need to care for one another and we need to respect one another and we need to use kind speech and we need to slow it down and take a breath. And so I just think that my challenge for New Lungs has been the most glorious opportunity to reconsider why I'm here. I think that's what I would say.
Absolutely beautiful. Well, I cannot thank you enough for sharing your story with us. I'm inspired by you. We can all learn so much from you. And paraphrasing that wonderful man on the plane who was so involved in AIDS research, you're clearly a survivor. You're absolutely a wise teacher, and you are affecting eternity. So I thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you both. Thank you.
And thanks to everybody who watched today. We look forward to sharing this with the world. Goodbye, everybody.